Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. And I know it might not feel like it or hasn't felt like it for the last couple of days, but my colleague, we're into October. Look for temperatures to climb up into the mid-80s again today. We could see some showers on occasions later in the evening, but especially for tomorrow, we're going to see some rain and then a little bit more rain on Monday. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. And you're right. It's October and it doesn't feel like it.
Can you say that one more time?
You're right. Oh, that's what you wanted to hear.
It was.
I got it.
I don't think you hear that very often, but thank you.
I'll say it one more time. You're right. That one was for Lisa, from Lisa.
Uh-huh.
How's that?
Yeah. And then we'll see a major cool down starting on Tuesday, and it'll begin to feel a little bit more like fall.
What kind of major cool down?
Down to the 70s. Temperatures will only climb up to the mid-70s after Tuesday, and then overnight lows will be in the 50s and the 60s. So it's not bad.
It's been crazy, though.
Yeah.
It really has. It's still dry. Think
it
about
is.
It. It's dry.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of people say that, boy, we could really use some rain. And I know that last week you talked quite a bit about making certain that the lawn got watered in.
Oh, not just the lawn.
I mean, the fertilizer got watered in.
Even more so, I mean, definitely the lawn. That's part mm-hmm. of the equation here. But in addition to that, anything especially new that you planted this season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. You know, make sure you're looking after stuff like that. Now, again, you know, don't overdo it with water, but make sure that it's present when necessary.
Sure.
You know, we say this all the time. If there isn't any precipitation, you know, in a given week or maybe two, it's been a long time,
mm-hmm.
Give your lawn 1 inch of water a week. And the same with your shrubs and your trees. It's easier to water, it's less expensive to water than it is to replace something that's very expensive.
Boy, isn't that the truth.
So we'll talk more about that this morning. We have a lot of great topics to cover this morning. So it's you and I all day.
Love
all
it.
Day, that's right.
Yeah.
And next couple of hours, we're going to talk about some of the pesky home invaders that we're starting to see trying to make their ways into our homes.
Sure.
What you can do to help keep them out. And, of course, our plant of the week will be the viburnum, a great shrub, by the way. And
yeah.
We're going to talk about sowing grass seed. We're running out of time. A lot of things to cover today, Ernie.
Yeah. We've been talking the last couple of weeks about making sure you get grass seed down. Now mm-hmm. is the time to start planting for next year. And you don't want to wait until spring to get this down. And then maybe you'll have some good luck on what you get a chance to sit around and enjoy.
Yeah.
Next year.
So we have a lot ahead of us to do this fall still. And the weather, you know, it's given us some opportunity, and it's extending the opportunity to, mm-hmm. in fact, sow grass seed to a degree. But, you know, think about it. Our average first frost date typically can very easily occur around the middle of October.
Right. Are you starting to see a lot of trees drop their foliage and leaves and
mm-hmm.
stuff?
I am.
It seemed to me that there was a little burst of that, and then maybe it's because of the dry temperatures. I haven't seen much in the way of leaves starting to drop there at the house.
You know, the other day I was up in the DeVue Park area where I had seen a few trees starting to turn some color.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me it was the trees that were a little younger for the most part.
Right.
Versus some of the older ones that were, you know, they're large trees. You know, they're heritage kind of types of trees
uh-huh.
that are of size, excuse me. And, you know, without adequate rainfall, you know, it has that negative effect on
sure
on the foliage of trees. You know, what we're seeing where some of the trees are just kind of yellowing off. Some of the leaves are dropping. And that is because, you know, trees have a canny ability to drop foliage when they're under a great deal of stress.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not dropping foliage, you better scratch your head and think about, hey, what might be, occurring here.
Right.
But, you know, that's good. If your tree's dropping leaves, it's trying to sustain itself.
Mm-hmm.
So,
This might be a great opportunity, too. I was thinking about this last week when I mowed the lawn. It might be time to tune up that mower blade to get it off and sharpen it. Going to do a lot of mulching in the next several
mm-hmm.
weeks.
You know, I like that idea about the mower blade. We're not too far away from mower maintenance, actually.
Yep.
But still, you know, cut the lawn on the highest setting or next to the highest setting. That is so important, especially because we've not had a great deal of rainfall.
Right.
And, you know, when the turf is a little taller, it shades the soil surface below,
mm-hmm.
therefore helping retain a little bit of that moisture that's still available, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So that's important. And with a sharp blade, it's a nice clean cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a jagged cut.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, your turf is less likely to lose moisture
right.
via the tips when they're jagged.
Yeah, what made me think about that was was seeing some of the leaves start to drop, and
mm-hmm.
I got to thinking, you know, I really like to mulch those first couple of times in and just leave that mulch there. And
you're talking about the leaves when they
leaves,
fall, right?
Yeah, before they're too heavy. But then again, once they really start to fall off, then mulch them and then blow them up and bag them up and get them out of the way.
Well, why bag them?
Well, because use that compost bin in the back.
Oh, okay. I thought you were sending those to the landfill.
No, I'm just getting ready
to scold you. Go to the corner
now. I was going to get taken to the woodshed.
Yeah, go to the corner now.
No, I just prefer to cut them up just a little bit before they go into the
good idea
into the compost.
You know, that's now that you mentioned that, this is a good time of the year to maybe construct a compost type of bin.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to do.
Yep.
And believe me, you know, after a period of time and you're collecting leaves, you know, you want to shred them up, you know, grass clippings and other various things. It
mm-hmm.
breaks down and it's wonderful to add to your garden beds.
Yeah, it really is.
I can't say how beneficial it is. And it's free. You don't have to go out and buy a bag of it.
Right.
What the heck?
Yep.
What do you want?
And then, of course, if you decide to do any late season fishing, you just pick that up, and there's usually a couple of worms laying around, and then go fishing and relax a little bit.
What about spinner bait? You gonna spinner bait, Ernie?
I'm too lazy to do all that. That's a lot of casting and reeling. I prefer to watch the bobber and drink. Just watch the bobber.
You just reminded me of something. I know this is
the
off
drinking
base.
Part?
Yeah, I know this is off base. And this is really it just came to thought. Have you ever been over to the old Latonia bait shop?
I have not been there in a long, long time.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. There's some, you know, when you said night crawlers and worms and various things, you know, they saw crickets. All right? And they had this big cricket bin.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to remember. It seemed to me there was like a yellow painted line around the top. And I was always questioning, why is that there?
Yeah.
And why don't those things jump out? Does that have something to do with them staying in that bin that they won't? Does that?
I don't know crickets that well.
I told you it's a stupid comment I was just going to come up with or a question.
Well,
I may look that up. But
yeah.
Just when you said that, I remembered asking about that once before in the past and never have really gotten
a
definitive answer.
Is that like a no cricket line there?
I guess,
they
no,
don't cross
yeah,
the yellow.
Yeah. No crickets allowed. I have no idea.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, since we're on the insect topic, let's talk about pesky home invaders. What
good
you can
idea.
Do to keep
yep.
them out.
Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we're going to be looking up that cricket question in just a few minutes. But as we were talking about some of our bugs and pests and stuff, there are some of those that are trying to make their way into the house.
They are.
I have seen quite a few stink bugs there at our house.
As a matter of fact, I had to take one and usher him outside this morning. I said, get your out of here. You know, so they're starting to make their way in. Spiders too. I'm seeing a lot of spider action.
Oh man, I have too, and I missed the opportunity. I'm gonna try to find a few hedge apples and put them down in the basement too, because I have noticed an increase in spiders.
I've used those before, and I'm not really sold on their effectiveness, Ernie.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I
require more research.
I don't know. That might need a little researching, too, as a matter of fact, in addition to the cricket question earlier.
Yeah.
That's your homework assignment for the night.
Okay. I'll get right on that.
But please do. You know, and tell me if that works, by the way.
I will.
The hedge apples.
Mm-hmm.
I used to pick a few of those up on hole number 5 over Twin Oaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see them around quite often, and I know my mom and dad always use them down in our basement and in the cellar area.
Well, I have a couple of remedies that I think are a little bit better than...
Yeah, well, you're stomping on them probably doesn't help.
No. But, you know, the stink bug, we're going to see more activity with that little pesky fellow.
Mm-hmm.
The spiders, you know, I'm starting to see a lot of that type of stuff going on. And spiders kind of creep me out. You know, I
think it's the surprise that bothers me most. You know, is suddenly you just, bang, they're there.
Yeah, they kind of, I don't know. I know they're good to a degree. Yeah. You know, there's no doubt about it. They have their place in the
sure
in the insect world. But, yeah. You know, spiders, you know, I just, I've seen some nasty bites on people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be one of those. Okay? I don't want to be a spider victim.
Yeah.
And also, you know, you'll see some of those multicolored, good-looking Asian lady beetles trying to make their way inside as well. So there's a couple of things that I think that we can do to help deter some of the activity or keep it, you know, in check to a degree. You're not going to stop at 100%.
No.
You know, you'll have to hire some people to help you and just guard the perimeter of your home.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like the soffit fence around your house or, you know, the astrakhet, you know, the stuff, you know, the stuff that's on the side and on the bottom of the garage door, your doors, your entries, your screens. You know, make sure that everything there is in good shape.
Right.
You know, that's something you don't do much often anymore is fix old screens, is it?
I was just thinking about that. Is we have some friends coming over to the house tomorrow for a meeting, and our screen on our door going out to the porch is in need of some repair, and I was just...
Is it like gnarled up and curled out and sticking out?
No, it's where my foot went through it down at the bottom.
You big dummy.
And Lisa was laughing. Isaac, our youngest grandson, who just turned one a couple of weeks ago, she said that he was down crawling around on the floor, and then because the cat uses it as an entryway when we have the thing out, and I guess Isaac was going to try to exit and go out to the porch through that hole. So I was just thinking, she used to do that when we'd have smaller windows, and I need to go up and get some screen fabric and try to knock that out today.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. But make sure your screens, you know, there aren't any holes, you know. And I've driven some neighborhoods where I just see the screens are totally out.
Yeah.
Windows are wide open, and you're just inviting those guests in,
sure.
You know. But I always like that look where, you know, part of the screen was in the, you know, in the screen window itself, and the other part was kind of just, like, gnarled out,
sure.
Missing.
Yeah.
That's a good look.
It is.
It is. Like,
yeah. It's got that lived-in look.
Yeah, somebody lives here.
You know, we're still probably 30 days away from bringing a lot of our house plants in, but some people have moved some of the plants in.
Right.
We've got to look at that before.
Hey, absolutely. That's on today's list, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're on your game.
I am.
I like that. But, you know, some of the things that you can do is, you know, look at your soffit fence. Make sure that you don't have any areas where you need to caulk around your windows, mm-hmm. around your front door, and so forth, and you'll help keep some of those pesky guys out. Now, what I like to do, there's a product that I think the world of when it comes to insects,
mm-hmm.
is High Yields 38 Plus. That is the stuff.
That's the
magic formula right there. Oh, yeah. And I'll spray that around my outside perimeter, Ernie.
Yeah.
And just as those bugs cross that, they're inches away on the other side, laying on their side.
Really?
They're down. They're down. It knocks them down. 38 Plus is incredible. You can't use it inside. That's the only drawback. But around the foundation of your home, around your doors, your windows, outside, it's very, very effective.
Hmm.
That's High Yields 38 Plus.
Okay.
Good stuff, buddy. Also, I also like to use Killabug 2. Which is, you can use that inside. So if you have some issues inside,
right.
That's safe to use inside. And then outside in the landscape beds, I like to use High Yields Turf Ranger. Does a great job. Great insect control. And you spread that out on top of your landscape beds, up close to the foundation. In addition to the 38 Plus on the foundation, you're golden.
Huh.
You'll keep a lot of critters away, a lot of insects when I say that.
That's good news.
kept me away. Keeps you away.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. You have to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, since we're talking about these pesky home invaders, they can also hitch a ride inside via your plants. And you you brought up a good topic there.
We'll talk about it when we come back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking a little bit about those pesky bugs every now and then. And we were talking about the stink bug. And a friend of ours called. We're going to check on the black and yellow striped woolly worm they found in the yard. We'll see how much snow that's going to
put. What does that really, excuse me, what does that really mean, Ernie?
Well, it's an old, it is a, I guess, a wives' tale, but as you can see, I happen to have a copy of the 2008 Farmer's Almanac, and they would predict how severe the weather was going to be and how much snow we could be by the thickness of the woolly worm and how soon you saw it in the year.
What? I think you're making some stuff up over there. I don't know. I've heard things of the sort, but again, wives' tales.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. You can you look that up in a break.
Sometime. I am.
I just won't take you too long. Don't pull that out right now. You're not a speed reader. You're not
just
a speed
enough
reader
to win the turkey.
You should have already known that.
I guess so.
I think that you should have. But we're talking about, you know, we are not far from bringing in some of our tropical plants that we so well prize. Mm-hmm. That's been doing well for the most part throughout the season. I'm talking about hibiscus, tropical hibiscus. I'm talking about mandevillas, bougainvillea. You know, some of your green plants that you've set outside for the most part throughout the summer months. We're not too far away from bringing them in, and doing so, there's a couple of things you need to do before you, in fact, bring those guys inside.
Yeah.
And that is treat them for insects. You know, just because you don't necessarily see something happening, those guys hang out on the underneath sides of the leaves. They get into the crevices of the branches and so forth, you know, where they come off the trunk of whatever. So, you know, you're looking for aphids. You're looking for mealybug, all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things that you can use that will make it successful prior to bringing in your plants where you can get rid of these guys. And I would do two things. First being, I would use some sort of an insecticide that is a systemic. And when I say systemic, what that means is the product will break down and it gets into the plant via its root system. And it goes up through the root system into the plant and kind of protects it. It's like getting a vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And usually various systemic insecticides, they have an effective period. Some are like 3 months, some are 4 months, some are up to six. But you need to do that a couple of weeks or so before you bring your plants in. High Yield makes a really good systemic insecticide. It's granular. So does Bonide. I like Bonide's systemic granules.
Right.
And the way that that works is you sprinkle that onto the soil surface of the container, the pot itself. And you do it according to the size of the pot. You know, it'll give you the instructions. You know, if it's a 6-inch pot, if it's an 8-inch, if it's a 12-inch, or if it's a gallon, you know, more is not better. You sprinkle it on top, and every time you water from this point forth or you get rainfall, it's slowly breaking down. It's going into the plant. Now, there are also sprays that are systemics that will go in through the foliage, but I like the granules better. Okay?
Okay.
So I would do that first and foremost. Secondly, I would either use some sort of a spray, something like insecticidal soap, Fertilum's Triple Action. That's a great product. That gives you three elements of protection. It's an insecticide, it's a miticide, and it's also a fungicide. So you're getting 3-in-1 right there. Also, Bayer makes a nice 3-in-1. Any of those products is going to really help you prior to bringing your plants in to get rid of some pesky intruders that might want to hitchhike into the house on your plant. So I'm glad you brought that up.
That's why I'm
and
here.
When we start, and I guess the real big question is, when do you need to bring in the plants? I always say, once we start getting down into the 40s, that's when you bring it in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, those temperatures start to, you know, they start to wave on some of these plants.
Now, overnight, when temperatures drop to the 40s or when 40s are the high?
Well, it's when you start getting into those overnight temperatures in the low to mid 40s.
Okay.
Yeah, you're starting to risk it. And hopefully, you'll take our advice. You'll try and get rid of some of those hitchhikers trying to come inside on your plants.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll save yourself a lot of trouble. And, you know, and on that same note, too, this is a good time when you bring your plants in. We'll talk about this in other shows as we go through the month of October. You know, you're going to need to prune back some of your tropicals, like your hibiscus. You know, I would cut those back a little bit because we're starting to bring things inside. We're cutting down on the amount of light that plant's accustomed to getting outside.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about sun. And when we reduce the top size of the plant, we're helping it get through the winter months indoors. It's a little easier, less stressful, but you can expect to see where some of the foliage starts to yellow off. Sometimes you might even see your hibiscus or your mandevilla even bloom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can expect that. You might even get leaf drop. But, you know, if you just hold them on throughout the winter months, you'll back off on your watering, okay? You're not going to water as often as you would as they're outside. And if you're ever in question, does it need water? If it's wilting and the soil is dry, obviously it needs a drink. And if you're not sure, just take your index finger, stick it into the soil surface of the pot, down about 2 or 3 inches. If it's moist and it's not wilting, leave it alone.
Okay.
And the other, one of the most important things that I want you to take heed to, do not fertilize. You do not want to encourage any new growth. When you get some new growth indoors, that's when the insects, you know, aphids love new growth, tip growth.
Mm-hmm.
So back off all of that stuff.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, I want to touch base on sowing grass seed. We're starting to push the envelope.
Ooh.
You know, are we running out of time? We'll talk about it.
The clock is ticking. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and it's going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house. We do have some rain coming in the forecast. We'll check that for you in just a little bit, but we've talked about this for the last several weeks, grass seeding.
Mm-hmm. Sowing grass seed. If you have some areas in the lawn that need a little attention, we're starting to push the envelope. You know, we may be running out of time. Last year, we got away with it going throughout the most part of October because we didn't have a frost until, I think it was early November.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, you know, mid-October towards the latter part of October, the last 2 weeks, we could very easily see our first frost. It's not uncommon. So keep that in mind. And with your owl sleet forecast where you're calling for some rain.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not anything torrential.
No.
This weekend might be a good opportunity to sow some grass seed still and still get away with it. However, if things don't pan out, you know, what happens is this, and I want you to kind of like just envision, you know, the whole process of if you sow grass seed today, typically, on average, it will take 10 to 14 days, give or take, for germination to occur.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, what's today, the 7th? That puts us out to where, Ernie? Do a little math for me.
I can. I'm out.
It's, what, we're looking at October 15th to 20th. So, that's putting us late into October. The grass is just getting up. And if we get a hard freeze or a frost for whatever reason...
Mm-hmm.
It could knock some of that back.
Well, according to the Farmer's Almanac.
There you go. Get the Bible out.
Our first frost very well could happen October 22nd, so you weren't very far off.
Well, write that down. Keep that in your memory bank.
I clicked
but
save.
That's. Are you sure you want to save it or you want to delete it?
No, I save.
Okay, so you're calling it out on October 22nd.
Not me personally.
No,
but
yes, you
2018
did.
Farmer's Almanac.
I'm writing
the first
it down.
Frost.
I'm writing it down.
Could occur October 22nd.
Okay, I'm gonna write that down.
Circle it.
I did. I wrote it down and circled it.
Asterisk over the sign.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting close, and all I'm wanting to point out is that if you don't risk it, you're not going to gain anything. So, and it's not a great deal of money to invest in some grass seed unless you're buying 50-pound bags. But if you have some various areas that are, still needing a little bit of attention, certainly go ahead and do it. And what doesn't work or take this fall, come back and winter seed sometime in February. You know, given that the weather's permissible to allow us to do that. So, I want to just touch base on that. You know, we're starting to, where you laughing?
I was just chuckling because I was following up a little bit more research on the frost dates as you were talking, and yeah. I love the Farmer's Almanac disclaimer here, which kind of throws net out.
Oh, you're throwing a disclaimer.
Yeah, well, I'm not.
But the small print?
The small print says, according to the Farmer's Almanac, the first frost date is October 22nd. Right below that in fine print, it says, the last and first frost dates are a 50% probability. So they're saying, we got a 50-50 shot. It may not be.
That's like playing roulette. It's either red or it's black.
Just like the rest of the my best guess forecast. So.
Yeah, but don't let that deter you. You know, still, if the weather may be well enough that we can squeeze it in. So that's what's important here. I just want you to be aware of, let's not put that off. If you need to do a little bit of grass, you know, sowing some grass seed, go ahead and try and get it down this weekend at the latest. You know, we can still pull it off. I'm confident of that, but we're pushing the envelope big time, you know. And take advantage of it. We got some rain in the forecast. Hopefully it's not going to be anything heavy or torrential, just maybe a nice rain, a steady rain. We need it. Gosh, do we need it. And also on that same note, it just as important, those two fall fertilizations for your lawn, you know, we need 6 weeks in between those applications. So if we're looking at the middle of November, start dialing it back. You know, it's time to get that first application down now. Extremely, extremely important. And take advantage of the upcoming potential rain that's in the forecast.
Get it watered in.
That just waters it in and it makes it effective. Ernie, my yard's growing like crazy.
Is it?
Yeah, nice and green. And that's what I say all along. When you get that first application for the fall fertilization down in early September, you get to reap those benefits. Nice green lawn. Mm-hmm. But you have to mow a little more often, which is okay. But I'm all right with that.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got to pause for a moment when we come back.
Well, stay on the lawn. We'll talk about fertilization.
Stay on our lawn. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have a caller on the line. Jack from Alexandria has got a tree trimming question for you. Good morning, Jack. What kind of tree is it?
Well, I got a weeping Japanese cherry that just loves my front yard. It blooms white every year, and it's getting big and kind of a weird shape. And I want to know how radically I can trim the top out of that thing before it'll come back.
I have another question. When you say it's kind of bizarre in shape, what do you mean? Is there something like shooting straight up out of this weeping cherry?
No, some of the branches are coming up out of the top, not straight. They're curved.
Okay.
But it's almost like 10 feet wide in some places.
Right.
Jack, do you have us on speakerphone?
I do. Okay. I had it on speaker and I turned it off now.
This is perfect. Thanks. Okay, great. Thank you. So you have a weeping cherry tree, and give me an idea how old it is. How long has it been in its current location?
Okay, I planted it, I believe, in about 06.
Okay, so it's pretty good size.
Prior to that, it was in the ground probably 2 or 3 years, maybe somewhere.
Okay. And is it encroaching on something, like a sidewalk?
No.
Or closer to no? Okay.
No, it's just kind of the it's kind of part of the landscape where there's a cove in my flower beds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just blends in with that.
Right.
And my front yard isn't very big, so it's just kind of balanced. And it's a little hard to
to mow under or grow grass under.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen where people have trimmed those back to make them look like an umbrella. Are you following me?
Well, yeah, that's kind of the shape I've tried to maintain
mm-hmm.
throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
But I've gone in and cut a lot out.
Right.
And I know a lot of the branches, the older branches, seem like they're about dead. But, I mean, I got stems growing off the middle of the tree and at the ground, too, that's a little bit of a problem.
Right.
I don't know if there's any way, anything to do about that, but I'd like to trim it back and almost start over.
Well,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand. You know, like those branches that you've trimmed in the past where you say that they're kind of like there isn't any growth or anything coming off of those, you know, those trees are grafted at the top.
They're what?
They're grafted. Most of those cherry trees, like you're explaining, are grafted. Is yours grafted? Is that
like when it was first started as a plant?
Yeah, they'll graft.
I have no idea.
Right. They typically
didn't like them and tore them out. And I said, I'm coming over. And he pulled them out and they're laying in the front yard without any dirt on them.
Okay. Well, I'm going under the impression it's a grafted weeping cherry tree. And when I say that, what they're doing, they're taping the weeping part and grafting it onto another rootstock to keep them at various, you know, heights on average, you know, where they're a little better behaved in the landscape. And what you're trying to do is to get it even more so by pruning it. You're only going to get so much growth out of the top of that where it's grafted, okay? And because what's there is what, when you prune it, it's going to break off of that prune point or that pruning mark and, you know, and continue to grow. But if you get into it really heavy, you're going to end up with a stub, or you might even end up to where what it was grafted to is going to break the graft, and all of a sudden the original plant from what the trunk is going to come out. Does that make sense? Have you ever seen where, that's why I was asking you, you know, it's weeping for the most part, but a lot of times if you see something that goes rogue, like a branch or a stem, and it goes straight up, that is typically from the trunk, not the grafted part of the tree that was put on that tree trunk. Does that make sense? But anyway.
I'm not sure that I have any of that.
That's good.
They all come out and curve like the weeping portion of the tree does.
Perfect.
But it's gotten thick and intertwined so thick that I don't have the round shape anymore.
Okay, got it.
And it's oblong and, you know, I tell you what's making me think maybe I can almost cut the whole top off. As I get all of these stems coming out of the about halfway up all the time and at the ground level.
Yeah, well, that's what we call suckering. That's not of any value at all.
Okay.
So what suckers from the base around the soil surface, you always want to keep that cut out. A lot of energy is being spent right there, you know, with that plant suckering at the base versus the rest of it. So keep that cut away. And anything growing on the trunk, you definitely don't want that because, you know, that's what that plant truly is what that trunk is. What we're trying to do is... Go ahead.
If I kept, like, maybe a third of what's on the crown, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
Would that probably let me go back as far as that's about as much as I might want to do?
You know, I would thin it out. Don't take too much off of it. You know, all of a sudden you might be looking at a stick without anything on top. You know, so I wouldn't take more than 20% out, just a little bit each year. Okay?
Gotcha.
And if you want, now, if you take some out now, what you're going to do, you're going to sacrifice some spring bloom.
The favorite part.
That's the favorite part. Exactly. Now, there's a couple advantages to pruning it at certain times with certain trees. Now, let's just say, for example, this tree has still a majority of its foliage left on it, correct?
Yes.
What I would do, I would wait till everything falls, and then you can look into that tree and get a better representation of what you want to remove when it comes time to, if you're going to prune it. Okay?
Okay.
That makes it easier to look at when you do it. If you do it in the spring after it blooms and you start cutting on it, and all of a sudden you take out too much, you're like, whoa, that doesn't look right. You can't tape or glue those branches back on.
So it's
always best just to do a little bit at a time, thin it out, and if you want it limit up, you know, you said it drapes to the ground or close to the ground, limit up and give it...
curve it back, yeah.
Limit up
and... it goes there pretty quick.
It does. Limit up and give it that lolly or that mushroom look. But don't take out a lot of that top because you may not see it down the road.
Gotcha. Okay.
And
that's why I waited till I asked somebody because I wasn't... And that's kind of what I've done in previous years is just gone out and taken some out, but I didn't get... I was leaning towards getting radical, but I'll kind of calm down a little bit on that. Okay.
Calm down. That's what my wife always tells me. When I start pruning, I prune, but... Yeah, but you got to be a little diligent about it, and it's always easier to prune when the foliage is off. Then you can get a really good look inside.
Now,
you
know, the diligent part is a problem.
You know, you can always fire off a photograph of your tree to us on Facebook if you do that.
Okay, I'm a fledgling with this technology, so I'll work on that.
Or you can send us an email. In and around the house at b105.com. That would give me a good representation to know that your tree that you're talking about is, in fact, if it's grafted, there's also some other cherry trees that are not. So that would help me tremendously, too. But what I explained to you was I'm under the impression that it's a grafted cherry since it weeps down as you described.
Okay. I'll do that. I have a crepe myrtle, two of them actually.
Yeah.
And the last couple of years, the winters haven't been too bad.
Right.
And they have really come out of the ground and thrived.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I basically had them cut off the ground and given up on them, but they came back.
Right.
Now they're thick and what have you and unruly.
Okay.
And I know that in the spring, I'm liable to get a lot of quick growth.
Okay.
Or when they start growing late in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a way to control those bushes?
There is. And actually, they bloom on new growth. So, you know, you can cut them back in the spring.
I just want to kind of...
thin it out.
If I take some of it out, will it's... like stay away and it'll keep growing additionally on what's there, or is it pretty much everything's new each year?
Well, you're going to see some new growth come up out of the base of it anyway, so it's almost shrub-like, correct?
Yeah.
And it's going to behave just like it did if you had it in the winter of 2012 and 13. I had a tree form that died back to the ground and came back as a shrub. So, you know, I kind of approach those in such a way as I would an old common lilac. If you want to thin it out, let's just say at the base there's 24 stems coming up out of the base, for example.
Okay.
What I would do is go in and cut out like 8 of the thickest branches. All right? And
the
then
thickest ones.
Uh-huh. And thin it out, see how it, you know, how it responds. You know, and do it where it's, you know, it doesn't have to be the 8 of the thickest. It could be a couple as you shape it. And then next year, see how it responds. You may get some new growth from the base as well. And then you can cut out some of the older wood again. And all you're doing is rejuvenating it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Don't go ballistic or get radical on it either.
Okay.
You know, because try and leave as much as that there as you possibly can through the winter months, because you never know how severe the winter could be or become. And then do that pruning late winter, early spring. And keep in mind that, you know, when it comes to crepe myrtles, they're one of the last to really push new growth. So you got to be patient with them.
Yeah, my blooms are just finishing up now. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice in the fall.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Keep us in the loop.
I got one more.
All right.
I got a Christmas cactus.
Uh-huh.
And it loves my front porch. It's kind of shaded on the north side.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to leave it out pretty long because anyway, the blooms are already starting again on me.
Okay.
How do I control the blooms so that I can get it to bloom closer to Christmas?
Well, what's happened, do you remember a few weeks ago we had those evenings, those overnight temperatures in the 40s, upper 40s?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been some of those nights we've been in the 50s. It's those temperatures and it being on the porch and a little bit shaded that kick off that bloom bud production. It's all about temperature. So it's already cranking.
You know, I thought it was light. Okay.
What you might do next year, you know, they run their course and it's all about temperature that kicks it off. But, you know, just put it in a little bit warmer place, not in direct sun, but just somewhere where it might be a little warmer.
Okay.
Or, you get in some of those nights when you're in the 40s, upper 40s, and 50s, then bring it indoors. And then introduce it.
If it's gotten acclimated to the hot summer, and I bring it into a house that I'm keeping around 75,
you're fine. It shouldn't kick off. No,
that'll be fine. Okay.
Yeah,
so I got to beat the cold low 50s, 40s, and that kind of starts the blooming process.
Yeah, in the 50s, it usually where you get less daytime light. You lessen the daytime light, give it a little bit more darkness, and get it in temperatures around 50, 55. That's what kicks off that bud production.
Okay.
So let it run its course. You'll see that sporadic blooming. Let it run its course. Then next year, if you see the temperatures get down to, you know, the upper 40s and 50s, just bring it indoors for the night. You know, it's just like, you know, when you bring it indoors for the night, it's almost like what it was during the daytime outside.
Right.
Introduce it to a little less light and cooler temperatures, and then try and time it that way with what the temperatures are outside.
Okay, great.
All right, Jack. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for all your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye. And let us know. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got to pause for a moment, and when we come back,
it's fall, so what does that mean?
Halloween,
pumpkins, all that good stuff. It's also a great time to plant.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that
when we come back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And hard to believe, Tony, here we are the first week of October, and we've been talking a little bit about a couple of things that we wanted to make sure you got done. But this is also the time to look ahead and think about planting some things.
Absolutely. And the fall is the best time to plant.
Yep.
It really is. And if you get an opportunity to go out to some of your local garden centers and nurseries and just see what's still around, what's still available, we're usually getting, you know, fresh material in, some more than others, you know, and this is the perfect time of year to see what, you know, as we get into the fall a little deeper, what plants are going to look like at this time of year.
Yes.
And what you see is pretty much what you'll get.
Right.
And I love fall color. It's my favorite time of the year. Yesterday, we just planted a ginkgo tree for a customer, and the ginkgo gets that beautiful yellow. You know, it's a very distinguishing leaf on the ginkgo tree.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular tree that we planted is one called Princeton Century, which is a perfect street tree if you're looking for something in between the sidewalk and the street.
Yeah.
Well-behaved. It's got that upright, narrow growth habit that it's less likely you'll see big trucks going up and down the street, moving trucks or whatever type of trucks that you ever see them brush up against trees. Damage trees.
Yeah.
So when we talk about planting in the fall, you know, planting the right tree or the right plant or the right shrub in the right place is so important. And, you know, this time of year, you're getting to see the color of specific trees that you can expect to enjoy, you know, once that tree gets a little bit older in your landscape. And I just wish more people would plant.
Sure.
A lot of landscapers do a lot of planting, and they're pretty well backed up. I was talking to Bob Bard the other day, and he said he's got enough work. He's pushed into November, you know, middle part of November, and that's great. You know, that's great news. But still, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you know, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. And, you know, I always say this too. Ernie, have you ever looked at a project and you just sometimes feel overwhelmed? And you think yourself to the point of being tired before you even tackle it?
Only everyone I've ever thought of.
Does that come with age? I don't
know. Yeah, I guess.
For me, you know, I can tire myself out thinking about what I have to do. But if you look at it like this, break it down into smaller projects, you know, around the house, around the home. Just break it down, you know, the front, the side, the back. Don't try and do it all at once.
Yeah.
And before you know it, just one bite at a time, you have it knocked out.
I hear this a lot. Finish one before you start the next one.
I bet you do.
I'm terrible at that.
I think that it's not a bad idea to keep a couple of projects going on simultaneously. For example, if there's one going on inside and you can't work outside because of the weather, then you have no choice to do the one inside.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's nice outside, do the one outside and take advantage of the nice weather we're still getting before it turns cold.
So that's how it's supposed to work.
That's how it's supposed to work. I think.
Yeah. I kind of like just bumbling around the house on the weekend on occasions and stumbling across projects that I've started and not finishing. Oh, yeah. I was working on that. Oh. Huh. I wonder what I was going to do here.
You already forgot?
Already forgot.
Is that what it is? You forget too easily.
Or find things and go, right. I wonder where that came from.
Right. And, you know, if you happen to plant a tree, I want you to register that with taking root.
Yes.
You know, we still have that initiative. You know, we're trying to plant 2 million trees by the year 2020. And we have three more years. I'm going to take it up through 2020. And register that tree. And, you know, we've lost a lot of ash trees in recent years. And what we're trying to do is plant a new tree.
Mm-hmm.
Trees are very beneficial. Trees are so important. And when you plant a tree, we're talking about the proper planting techniques.
Mm.
I always want you to and encourage you to use either a root stimulator or a product from Espoma called Biotone or Fertilum's root stimulator. One of those two will get that tree off to a great start.
Mm-hmm.
We still get a lot of root development during the fall months and the winter months because the soil temperatures are still relatively warm and are conducive for root development. Although the ambient air temperatures as we cool down in the fall is cool, there's a lot of activity happening under the soil surface.
Yes.
So that's why it's a perfect opportunity to plant, and there's a lot of less stress on a shrub and a tree because they're shutting down. And when I say they're shutting down, not below the surface of the soil, they're still active. They're shutting down up top. They're dropping their foliage. A lot of less stress, less shock, and they just get adapted better taking that fall planting approach.
Mm-hmm. 749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And not only do planting trees help with aesthetically and just a peaceful, easy feeling, it also provides a little cover for our feather friends. And we have Denny, a bird man, on the line.
Cool.
Denny, good morning, Denny.
Morning. How y'all doing?
Doing dandy, thanks. How about you?
Oh, I can't complain too much.
Good.
So, but I was just calling to let y'all know that I think the hummingbirds have gone south.
They've exited, huh?
Yeah, I haven't seen none for a couple of days now. I saw a few stragglers towards the beginning of the week, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen much of anything for the last 2 or 3 days. So
they may have moved on. Time to take the feeders down and clean them?
Yep, clean them. Store them away till next spring and stuff, and put up some seed feeders and stuff like that. So
I agree.
That's what I always do. I always replace the hummingbird feeders with a seed feeder and stuff like that. So, you know, I still like watching my birds.
Sure. When do you think the finches are going to start changing color back to the...
Well, a lot of them are already changed back.
Yeah.
And things like that, but they're still hanging around. They'll be around most all year.
Sure.
They're even here in the wintertime. They're just different color, and people don't realize it's the same bird.
Well, Ernie does it because he's colorblind.
True. But I noticed less activity on the finch feeders here recently, and I wasn't sure what that was all about.
Yeah, a lot of them are heading south and stuff like that because it's migratory season stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anytime from September through October and stuff like that, they're all heading south again. So
okay, so some of them do stay and some go.
Yeah, maybe the ones that were up north and stuff like that come down here, and this is their south. You know,
yeah,
things like that. But they do have a tendency to hang around in the wintertime, especially if you got feed and stuff like that for them.
Sure.
So
all right, wait. Well,
hey, I have a question for Denny, so don't hang up on him yet, Ernie.
See
how Ernie is? I'll tell you. I have a question. Are you familiar with the nesting boxes that you can change and convert to a roosting box?
Yes. All you really got to do is just basically clean them out.
And also you can reposition the hole. You ever see that where, typically in a nesting box, the hole's up towards the top of the box?
Yes.
And then you could take it and reverse it and put the hole close to the bottom of the box to where they can go in low and go up high and stay out of the wind, I guess, or roost in there when it's cool.
Well, I've never changed any holes around or anything like that, but I have noticed that some of my nesting boxes are used as roosting boxes
right.
in the wintertime.
Interesting, yeah. Well, I picked up a couple boxes, and I noticed that you can, invert the door. So
I've never noticed that before or anything like that or even heard anything about anything like that. So, I've always noticed that my nesting boxes are used in the wintertime. You know, I just clean them out, but sometimes you'll see two or three birds in there in the wintertime.
You know what, I'm gonna take a picture of that box I'm describing. And I thought it was very clever. So during the early part of the spring and early summer, it's a nesting box. And then during the late fall and winter, you change the door position, and it becomes a roosting box. But
The only thing I would know that would roost up top like that or something like that from a hole down below would be a bat.
Yeah, that would,
yeah.
You know, so... Because that's what bats do, they like to go in the bottom and climb up towards the top where it's warm and stuff like that. But I've never noticed any boxes like you're talking about.
That's just why I threw that out there. If anybody knows,
I'll ask the bird man. I'll see one and see what they say.
You got it.
So, but that's about all I can do right now. I'll ask them about it and see if they know anything about them and stuff like that.
We'll follow up with this next Saturday. Denny, always a pleasure, buddy.
Always a pleasure. Have a good day.
You do the same.
If I don't talk to you before then, see you later.
Thanks. All right.
Have a good
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
I found something out the other day. Katie and I went on a road trip, and we stopped up there at Vonderhaar Fireplace Stoves and Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out some interesting stuff. I want to just talk about it briefly because I remembered you had mentioned something about your two fireplaces.
Okay. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And boy, covering a lot of ground today. Tony said he went on a field trip with Katie, and he's got some stuff to share.
Well, you were talking earlier before we start the show this morning that you rented a log splitter, or you're going
And I've got one reserved for next weekend, and going to be splitting some logs.
And I know you burn a lot of wood. And
yes,
I was trying to remember, and I'm tying this into a little side trip that Katie and I took the other day up to Vonderhaar Fireplaces, Stoves, and Masonry up in, I'm not sure what part of Cincinnati that is, up near Cincinnati-Columbus Road.
Mm-hmm.
But very interesting to say the least. But didn't you say you were having a problem with the drafting of your upstairs fireplace?
At the beginning of the season, we do. If you leave the flue open downstairs, it creates a counter draft. If she has a fire burning upstairs,
it comes downstairs.
There's a little hint of the fire.
Well, I found out why.
Why is that?
Because I think that the top where the flue comes out,
yep.
they're at the same height, right?
Yeah, they are.
So when one's drafting, the other one's pulling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
So I need to
need to adjust that.
Yep. Anita, we put covers on them when we put a new roof on the house a couple of years ago. And I was thinking about that while I was up there putting the covers on. I wish I would have thought to put, I guess, an extension on the one from downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
No, from the one upstairs.
Well, Kirk's coming in on the 21st.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to talk about chimney sweep services and so forth. And he's even going to go as far as he's going to take a look at my house. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious, you know, what's it look like up top on that crown? And, you know, everybody should have a chimney cap too.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of things that, you know, you don't think about as a homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I've not been up on a roof in some time to even look at the that crown part that's on the top.
Well,
it can crack, water can get into it.
Yeah, yeah. And we, you know, when we repainted the house, I got up there and did a lot of work on both of those and the flues for the furnace and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I had all those inspected, had all of them cleaned, and then when we got up there, we did a lot of work on that. But I should have seized that opportunity and put an extension on the chimney from downstairs.
Well, he's going to be in with us, so you can ask him all that.
Okay.
But you talked about firewood earlier in the show, and I thought, what a tie-in, because I remembered you talking about that draft. And you talk about somebody, he's out in the field, he's right on top of it, he's always involved with what they're doing,
right.
And you can't hardly find somebody that's good at tuck pointing either.
Oh, man.
That's important, too, to make sure everything's all intact.
And, you know, the thing about that is you brought something up that's near and dear to my heart. That's something that gets overlooked all the time, and it will always come back to haunt you.
Big time. So Kirk from Vonderhaar Fireplace Stoves and Masonry will be with us on the 21st.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you need to get in touch with those guys, if you need a chimney sweep or somebody to take a look at that, you can get them a call at 513-242-1110.
And we're looking forward to having you on
the
show.
Time.
Tony, we have Pete on the line from Independence who's got a question for you about replacing a pear tree. Pete, how old's the tree?
Well, I already cut it down. I have no idea how old it was.
It's not going to get any older, that's for sure.
Was it an old Bradford?
You know, I can't tell if it was Aristocrat or Bradford. Also,
yeah.
I did not like it.
You know, I think that's pretty much the general consensus these days with the pear tree. And as a matter of fact, you know, we see a lot of those volunteers on the side of the expressways and so forth, just all throughout the tri-state area. And
that's actually one of the reasons I cut it down.
Yeah, good for you. Kudos. All right. So what's on your mind? What are you thinking?
You know, I don't know. There's so many choices to pick from, but mm-hmm. What makes it concerning is it's on the west side of my house.
Okay.
So, and we get a lot of wind.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't want it to fall on my house down the road.
Yeah.
So, but we have a front porch on our house that mm-hmm. we get a ton of sun. So, we cannot sit in the front of our house at night. The heat from the sun just reflects off. We have a stone on the front of our house, so it just gets really hot on the front porch.
Right.
I'm looking for something large to shade the front of the house,
right,
but also strong enough to withstand the winds so it's not going to eventually fall on the house.
Right. I'm with you. I see exactly where you're going. You know, a couple of things. So obviously you have plenty of room for a shade tree. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. Our front yard isn't too deep. It's about from the front of our house to the sidewalk, I believe, is around 30 feet.
Okay.
And if it helps, I could jump on your Facebook page real quick and shoot a photo to you.
That'd be great. That would be great.
That works.
But in the meantime, we can talk about some wonderful shade trees. There are a lot to choose from, and, you know, immediately this time of year, I always think about a maple, you know, and, you know, there's various types of maples that are available at local garden centers and nurseries that give you a different type of a profile. And when I say profile, I'm really talking about the crown of the tree itself, the upper part of the branching structure, you know, so, based upon space constraints and certain limitations, obviously, a tree like a Red Point maple might be very well suited because it has a more of a pyramidal, oval, upright type of growth pattern or growth habit. Right. And you might get about a 30-foot spread, meaning from the center of the trunk, you're going to go out 15 feet, give or take, in all directions, allowing that tree plenty of room to grow. Versus if you were to, one of my favorites is the autumn blaze maple. You know, you get that beautiful red color in the fall, but it has a different type of profile. It's a little wider. It could go up to 40, 45, 50 feet in width. And almost the same, you know, height, you know. So the canopy is going to be totally different than another type that's got a narrower canopy. So you got to determine that. But, you know, one of the benefits with the autumn blaze, it's a little quicker grower. And, you know, so you're going to get a little bit of more growth than you will some of the others that are just moderate growers. But certainly those are two trees I would consider. Also, you know, I like some of the honey locusts, you know, the skyline locusts. They're little, they're airy trees. So, they're not very dense, but they allow in some light too, but will also give you that shading element. You could use, I'm trying to think, a hawthorn would be a nice tree. It's not a very tall tree. I like the Winter King. I like the Winter King hawthorn.
Yeah, the hawthorns, they get, what is it, about 15 feet tall?
Yeah, about around 20, give or take.
Yeah, I think we're looking for something larger than a hawthorn, but something along the lines of the locust, how it's airy, and you can kind of still get a little bit of light through it to not choke out our front grass or something like that.
You know, another tree that's really kind of been popular in recent years is the Kentucky coffee tree. It can put on some decent growth, an excellent shade tree, as a matter of fact. So you're not going to go wrong there by any means. You know, there's also, you know, if you thought about any of the Zelkovas, you know, the Japanese Zelkova or green vase, those would be nice choices too. Green vase is a little narrower type of profile, but it's a great street tree. But Zelkova would be good. Village Green would be good. I know some of the people, there's some people that will plant elms. Alley Elm is one of my favorites. You'll love the bark on the Alley Elm.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a number of things. You know, even the American Linden tree. It's a beautiful tree.
Yeah,
you know, little
like
little leaf lindens. Those are excellent trees. You know, don't forget about those. You know, so there's a number of various trees. You know, even some oaks. You know, I like oaks, but they can get quite large. You know, maybe a little too large.
Oaks are probably on my top 10 favorite trees, but I think it's going to be too large.
Yeah. You know, everyone, you know, you see a lot of these. They're river birches. They put on some quick growth, but certainly don't put that up close to the house. Put it away from the house. That will give you a little bit of shade.
We wanted to stay away from something that you see in everybody's yard, and it seems like you see a lot of the river birches and a lot of maples and oaks. So
I'll tell you one, right, the black gum tree. My gosh. That you don't see that tree that often, and you talk about a stellar tree, beautiful tree.
I do not remember the black gum tree, so I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, that would be an excellent choice. So, you know, a quick growing tree that you're familiar with too is the tulip tree.
Yes,
you know, large too. Large leaf
in our yard.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah, you know how quick they grow, and they provide a lot of shade. The yellowwood, that would be a good tree.
The yellowwood, that's kind of airy, like the like the locust, correct?
Mm-hmm. Nice tree. You know, you don't see those often either. Maybe a tricolor beech, but that's a slow grower.
Yeah,
there's a couple there. Shoot me over a photograph, and I'll just Where are you calling from, by the way?
Independence.
Yeah,
I shared it to the page when we first started the conversation, so I think
it
should
take a look at it.
Be there.
You know, stop down at the store sometime if you're familiar where we're located on 3L. I can give you a couple pamphlets on some various trees that you might want to look into.
Okay.
But any of those would be beautiful. You know, there's a magnolia called I can't remember the name. Wada's Memory.
Who?
Wada.
What is it?
A magnolia called Wada's Memory. That tree is a beautiful tree. It's not like your typical magnolia. Check it out. Wada's Memory. That's another one that comes to thought.
It's on my list.
So that's, you know, those are...
Unfortunately, my list is now just as large
as our
conversation was before.
And there's some others, you know, those are just trees are coming to, you know, the thought right away, but there's a lot of various possibilities. Stop down.
I will.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy, is going to pause for a moment. When we come back,
what's happening around the garden centers? It's all about fall.
We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. 7:30, we're looking for possibly some rain starting later this evening and possibly tomorrow, but we need it.
And by the way, before we go on, Johnny, you got to give us a moment of silence and a little Tom Petty, buddy.
We can't do both.
I know, but you know, I'm just thinking about that. I just wanted to rock out when I heard that coming back in, that bumper music, but
we're
going to miss Tom. I'm going to miss Tom.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Good God.
But I didn't mean to interrupt you. That just came to thought, and I'm thinking.
It just struck me as funny. You can't do a moment of silence and play Tom Petty, but we'll figure that out.
We're going to work it in. A moment of silence, and then we're going to play Tom Petty.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right.
So what's going on down at the garden center?
You know what? It's all about fall decor.
It is.
It's fall. You know, moms are starting to, they're getting on a short supply right now. So if you've yet to dig in there and plan a few moms yourself or take care of some of those old tired containers or window boxes, be sure to do it because things are becoming a little short from a supply side on some of the mums. So keep that in mind. But still, there's a lot of other fall stuff that you can plant. Some of the grasses, some of the various ornamental peppers, ornamental cabbage and kale, and different things that will really spruce up some of those tired pots. And even, you know, you want that burst of color. There's still some pansies available out there, too. A lot of color. You put them in the ground, they're more than likely to winter over and give you some color in the spring, too. So get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and look for these items. Spruce up those pots. Make them look nice.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Indian corn, the pumpkins, the gourds, the straw bales.
Fantastic decoration.
All that stuff, man. Yeah. Come on, the little ones, they want to see that out there in front of the house, you know. Make it fun for them. Hey, we're just a few weeks away from Halloween and trick-or-treat and having all that stuff out there and getting everybody in the mood.
Yep.
You know, my neighbor up the street's already got all that Halloween decor up and the purple lights, the orange lights. I like that kind of stuff.
I do, too.
You dig it?
Yeah, I do. It's one of our favorites, and it's just wonderful seeing all the decorations kind of get you in the mood for that.
Sure.
For that season, so to speak.
And you can get all of those things at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get the kids geared up for the Halloween season, too. Keep in mind that our good friends over at Burger Farms, they got the hay ride and all that stuff going on, a big pumpkin festival.
Yeah.
So check out the gang over at Burger Farms. If that doesn't get you in the mood, I don't know what will.
No, it would certainly be in your best interest to get out there if you need a little spark, I guess, to get you in that mood. Because that's a fantastic festival.
You know, talking about Halloween, Ernie, as we get closer too, have you started buying candy yet and eating it already?
No,
Ernie,
don't do that.
You're looking good because you've been putting weight on. I want to compliment you on that.
That's not the objective. The objective is to lose weight.
You don't look good when you lose weight.
Leave that all up to Lisa. She takes care of buying the candy, then she hides it, and then we give it away.
You know, I forgot who, I don't know who did this the other day. Somebody brought in some candy around the workplace. It's like those little miniature, like, Snicker bars, and, you know, sometimes the the good old Reese's cup.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I know. That's good stuff.
You know what? There's an additional 100,000 calories per year you eat just to being around the office. I did read that story. So
you know firsthand. It's happened to you.
I know firsthand.
It's happened to you.
Yeah. There's no denying that.
You know, there's
that.
People come into the garden center and they'll say, is there any really as big as you put him, you know, describing as being? I said, heck yeah.
That's right.
I said, he's got a head on him like a house cat. What do you mean by that? I said, he's a big boy. Look at him.
Yeah.
I said, I'll pull up your picture on Facebook, and they'll see me next to you, and they're like, well, he's not that big.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Good thing you're not on TV. You always look bigger, don't you?
Oh, man. That's why I don't do very well with selfies. My arms aren't long enough. Can't get this big.
Well, I know that. You got alligator arms. We go out, you never foot the bill.
Oh, ta-dum bump. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Pete from Independence did post those pictures.
Oh,
there
check
on
that
our
out.
Facebook page.
I was just telling John, you know, when I think of trees, it just one or two will come to thought now and a couple mm-hmm. a little bit later. And in the break, I didn't even mention the sassafras. You know, he was looking for a different tree.
The sassafras?
The sassafras. Really cool tree. Mm-hmm. You know, so hopefully he stops by. I have a couple brochures I can give him that will give him plenty of homework to do mm-hmm. and figure out what would best be suited.
Right.
Look for the different.
Yeah, there's something to be said about making sure the right plant's there,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you spend an awful lot of money on it and you want the best results. And if you put the wrong plant in the wrong place, you're defeating the purpose.
Right. You know, in the Facebook page, it's a great way to stay connected with us. We had a question the other day about when to prune back a hardy hibiscus. And most hibiscus still should have some foliage on them. I know that what we have in the garden center still do, one that we have called Choco Lot, which has got some beautiful foliage on it for our hardy hibiscus this time of year, turning a nice reddish orange color. And I might even, if I get a chance, to post a picture of the blooms of Choco Lot, but it's a beautiful hardy hibiscus. But the question was posed, when do I prune back the hardy hibiscus? Well, the hardy hibiscus behaves like an herbaceous perennial, meaning that it dies back to the ground each year. And most importantly, next year, when you're waiting for it to break dormancy, be patient, because it's one of the last to break dormancy, and it's going to break dormancy from the ground back up. And once you start, right before you see the new growth, or once that new growth starts, then I want you to prune out last year's old stuff, old wood, and take it down to just a couple of inches above the soil surface. So that's how you'll treat the hardy hibiscus. The tropical versions, Ernie, you got to bring them inside.
Yep.
And you have nothing to lose to bring in the tropical hibiscus. If it doesn't make it, it doesn't make it. But if it does, you're going to save yourself a couple of dollars next
mm-hmm.
year. I'm going to lose a couple because you won't be in to buy a new one. But you can certainly do it, and it's very rewarding that you do it. So give it a whirl. If you don't, you never know.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Your local home and garden guys need to pause for a moment. And when we come back,
we'll touch again on those pesky home invaders.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they're trying to make their way in. What can you do to fend them off? There you go. Thanks, Johnny.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And before we get to Tony and some of those pesky invaders, we want to remind you that the Fall Festival is in full swing out at Burger Farms. They're located at 7849 Main Street. And it happens every weekend in October from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. And it is a fantastic family experience. Take the kids out there and have a ball.
That's a good time. Take you out there. You'll have a ball.
I'll have a good time.
We should stop over there sometime.
Okay.
I like to run into Lynn and Ken and Bart and see what's going on over there. Just we'll probably hit the park way off premise and take a bus in. They're busy.
Okay.
They have a crowd.
I love to see
always
that.
That's a fun event. Yeah. Everybody that's been there at Burger Farms for their pumpkin festival and all that good stuff, I'm sure they have a lot of great stories to tell. And over the years, you know, it's kids remember that, and then as they get older,
certainly.
They bring their kids back, and mm-hmm. it's like that stuff becomes generational, and that's what's so important. And you know, and that's what you know, local and small businesses are all about. And if that doesn't mark and say that, hey, we're part of the community. We're the cornerstone of the community. I don't know what will, but a great time for all. Talking about pesky invaders, you know, this morning on as I was leaving the house, look up, and there's a stink bug right there on the wall. I'm like, dude, come here.
You got to go.
You got to go.
Hey, bro. Did it answer you?
He's like, what do you mean?
Who, me?
This is what I mean. Bap, come on.
Mm-hmm.
So I ushered him outside. I showed him the door like you did a lot of people when you were a bouncer.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm going to show you the door.
Sometimes they just don't know where it is. You have to help them.
I know. But this time of year, you know, these guys are starting to make their way inside because, you know, on the south and west side of the home, you know, inside around the window areas, it's kind of warm. It's comfortable for those guys as it starts to cool down. But, and spiders too, they're active right now. And I know spiders are very beneficial from, you know, keeping other insects under control. I wig out on spiders, and like I said earlier, I know too many people that have been bitten by these dudes,
yeah.
And it's not pretty.
No.
You know, face swells up, and it's like,
yeah.
Hey, what are you chewing tobacco? No, man, it's my jaw. I just got bitten by a spider.
I tell you something I did learn over the years. If you have work boots or snow boots or anything like that, take your vacuum, if it has a hose, and vacuum out the inside of your boots before you put your foot in there.
That's a good idea.
Or you'll be taking a trip to the hospital.
Perfect there. I like, you're thinking that.
I am.
Man, you're on your game. You got up early this morning.
I did.
Literally.
I did, yeah.
But yeah, use a vacuum too if you come across a few of these guys. You don't want to smash the stink bug. They do have a foul odor.
Mm.
But you know what? To me, it kind of smells like cilantro. Not that that makes me want to eat them or put them in a salsa by any means. But
put them on your salad.
Yeah, no. Uh-uh. And also, you know, you may see some of the box elders trying to make their way in, and some of the Asian lady beetles. And the good thing is these bugs don't really carry any types of diseases, nor do they really bite. But there's some things that you can do outside to help. You're not going to keep them all out, but, you know, it keeps a lot of these guys out. And that's sealing up those areas where you have cracks or various entry points to where they can get into the house easily.
Sure.
You know, check the caulking around your windows, around your window frames, around your doors. You know, we're talking about screens. Make sure there aren't any holes in the screens. Check your soffits, you know, underneath the soffits that, you know, the screens and the soffits are all intact and things are well caulked. And also you can use some various products that will help keep these bugs away as well. And one of my favorites is 38 plus. Good stuff. That's the highest amount of permethrin that you can get over the counter and spray around the outside of your foundation. This stuff works, I can tell you. I've used it and I will continue to use it. The only unfortunate thing is you can't use it inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's that strong. But spray your foundation, spray around your door frames, spray around your windows, spray around the garage area. And you'll notice, I'm telling you, you'll see a lot of dead bugs. And the stuff is highly, highly effective. If you're one of those people that's like, ooh, you get creeped out on insects, that's the go-to. 38 plus from High Yield. And then I like to couple it up with a little bit of Killabug 2. That's another High Yield product that you can use indoors. But outside, in the landscape beds, Turf Ranger Insect Control. It's a granular product. You spread it, you sprinkle it out on the landscape beds. That coupled with 38 plus, you shouldn't see any insects.
Mm.
You'll run them to your neighbor's house.
Right.
I'm telling you, it's good stuff.
Run them back outside.
Yeah, and you'll find the high yield products at your local garden centers and nurseries. And if you need to catch what I said, email us or send us a Facebook message. I'll respond.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Speaking of Facebook, a great way to stay connected with us. You can post pictures and post questions, and we will respond back to them. You can also reach us, email in and around the house at B105.com. And a lot of our guests and sponsors have been joining us over the, you know, over the years, and it's great to link between our Facebook and their Facebook page. You can also check those out as well. And we need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
Couple of things. In the 8 o'clock hour, hang out with us because we're going to talk about our plant of the week, and it's the viburnum. And I got a lot to say about the viburnum. It's a wonderful shrub. But in the next segment, I want to talk a little bit about grub control. Where are we? What can you look for? And I've heard people saying the lawn looks like it's peeling up.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning and getting some things done. We want to remind you again that here we are the first week of October. Make sure you get the plant or the grass seed down, get the fertilizer down, and get ready.
Get ready. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something has just popped up as of recent. A couple of people have called the garden center like, hey, my turf is just... it's disintegrating. I can just peel it back.
Mm-hmm.
And when I kind of hear that, you know, it tells me there's some possible grub activity.
Right.
And we've talked about grubs in the past at various times. And there's really two approaches to grub control. One of those is you're going to be more on the proactive side. And when I say that, you're using products like Grub Free Zone from High Yield earlier in the season before grubs hatch.
Mm-hmm.
Now those eggs hatch. So what happens is that gets into the turf root system and into the turf. And as they start to feed on the turf, they don't make it. Now we're to the point in the season where when we start seeing issues with the turf and you can pull it back, it just peels up like a sod. Or if you see a lot of white grubs under that soil surface, you got a problem. And the only way you're really going to go after the grubs at this point in time, and it's still relatively warm that you can do it successfully, is you need to take a curative approach versus a proactive approach and use a product that has Dilox in it. Dilox is highly effective. Once you spread that out on the turf surface and water it in thoroughly, you got to do that immediately, it starts working within 48 hours. And so it's the curative approach that you need to take. Which also leads me to tell you this, and we talked about this earlier in the show, when you need to sow grass seed, we're pushing the envelope. We're starting to run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're having some issues with grubs and you want to sow grass seed, you know, you're going to have to take care of it rather quickly with the Dilox and hopefully take advantage of, you know, water it in today's rain or what we have in the forecast for upcoming next week. But when you sow grass seed, it's going to be 10 to 14 days before that grass seed will germinate.
Okay.
And that takes us to the middle, latter part of October. And we said earlier that typically in October, and you can give us that farmer's almanac prediction that you came up with, we can very likely see frost at that point in time. Hopefully we don't, and that we can get some of these things under control, get some of the turf areas repaired. And what doesn't take this fall, we're going to come back and take care of it sometime in the middle of February and winter seed. So those are your options. And, you know, just be on the lookout. You know, when you're mowing your grass, we talk about this all the time. If you're mowing once a week, pay attention to your trees. Pay mm-hmm. attention to your shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention to your landscape beds. Pay attention. And a lot of times you'll catch things in an earlier enough stage that you don't have any serious issues. Nothing worse than to, you know, we had those bagworm calls.
Yeah.
You know, hey, that activity's been going on for some time. And by the time you see it and everything's stripped off of that conifer, you can't put needles back on them.
No.
You know, so pay attention to what's going on. And something else, we get a little bit of rain today. I will do this often. And I will, if it's not lightning, you know, I'll go outside, pop an umbrella, and just make sure my gutters are flowing like they should,
mm-hmm.
the downspouts are, nothing's clogged, because nothing worse, you get a couple downpours and water's backing up and coming in underneath the gutter up under the shingles, and you have some issues inside with the drywall. So paying attention to what's going on is really of the essence, and you'll save yourself a lot of headaches.
Yeah, you made a really good point there. It has been so long since we've had any rain, mm-hmm. Any precipitation to mention. When it does start to rain, that's the perfect opportunity for you to walk outside and make certain that you do have gutter flow, mm-hmm. and it's not just running over top, because once
absolutely.
That happens, then you get water down in that soffit, and that's going to lead to some deterioration and some other bigger problems.
You know, and when you have wet, damp areas, you know, that's just a breeding haven for insects. Mm-hmm. You know, they gravitate towards those areas. And, you know, and even so, we're at that time of year where a lot of tree debris, you know, trees are starting to drop a little bit. They're mm-hmm. stressed. You know, we've had a lack of precipitation. But, you know, the gutters are starting to fill up with some things. So keep an eye on, you know, what's going on around the house. And hopefully you don't have to call somebody to come in and do some major work for you. It's being proactive. It's always better than being reactive and surprised.
That's true. Yeah,
that's no kidding.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking about rain, and I hope we get some this afternoon. September was not kind to us. And, you know, Bob Bard and I have had this discussion. I've had some discussions with some other people. You know, it's dry. And typically in the month of September, we'll average around 2.5 inches of rainfall. Last September, most of that rainfall that we did get was in the first 2 days mm-hmm. from Hurricane Harvey. The rest of the month was pretty much nil. And there was a stretch of time right there, Ernie, that from the 21st of September through the 27th, 6 of those 7 days, we exceeded 90 degrees in temperature.
Yes, we did.
And if you don't think that I had any negative impact on your shrubs and trees and perennials, you better think again. Mm-hmm. And it's easier just to get out there and water a little bit versus replace something that might be costly. But hopefully today we get enough rain and the upcoming week. It's important that we take care of what we planted this season to get it set up and healthy enough to go through the winter months.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully it'll wait until after the my grandson's football game at noon.
Well, I hope it does for you, too.
Yeah. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I was just looking at the radar, and that's not really promising unless we start to get some pop-up showers that that show up. It looks like it's going to go around the northwest part of Cincinnati, but we can hope for the best, and hopefully we'll see a little rain and get some. You made a good point last week about having the fertilizer down. It's not doing any good if it's just laying there. You got to get it watered in and get it working.
Get it watered in. That's so important. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple other important things, too, this time of year. We were talking about it being ideal to plant. You know, if you have some new trees that you did plant this year, make sure you protect that trunk from the deer rubbing up on that trunk. They will tear a tree up lickety-split. And all of a sudden, you have a wound in the side of a tree that has a very difficult time of healing. And a lot of times, that tree is never the same. So protect your trees in one of two ways. The first being, use a little bit of chicken wire and just gently wrap that around the trunk. I like the chicken wire because it keeps the deer from rubbing on the tree. It also allows air and light to get to the trunk. The other approach that you can take is to buy the corrugated black plastic, cut a slit up the side, and just put that around the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Some form of protection is better than none. Now, using the black corrugated plastic, that works, but I would be inclined the following season to take it off to allow air to get to that trunk. So those are some things that you need to consider and think about going into the winter months. Deer, they're on the move, and they will tear up newly planted trees. So that, too, can be costly if you're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a big doe in the backyard the night before last. It was mm-hmm. very early in the morning. I was out on the porch having a little coffee with Lisa and noticed some movement over on the far right-hand side, and there is a pear tree that's over there that had some pears that dropped off that we didn't get a chance to harvest, and I noticed that it had spent quite a bit of time over there around that tree, and apparently it was picking up some of those leftover pears and kind of nibbling on them for a while. But she was pretty big.
Yeah, and what you're doing is, now, she's going to come back.
Oh, yeah.
That's her coffee stop in the morning now, okay? She's coming back.
Yeah.
And use some of the deer products. They really work. And tell me, Ernie, Tony, you should take heed to your own advice. Thank you. I should, because they tore up my tomato plants this year.
Oh, did they really?
They did. Hmm. However, I know for a fact, if you use the deer products, I've used them, and if you use them like I ask you to, and I need to, they are effective. Deer Scram.
Yeah.
You can't beat it. It's guaranteed. Liquid Fence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those products, they work,
yeah.
But you've got to use them. And what you're trying to do is change the habit of the doe
mm-hmm.
that's coming to the yard to get the pears like it's the morning coffee stop.
Let's go down to the Browns.
Yeah, go down to the Browns. To the Browns.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A couple of great ways to stay connected with us on our Facebook page. And it is one of our favorites, too, because we get a chance to look at the pictures when you pose questions to us. We get a chance to check out the plant or the tree or the grasses, and gives us a little bit better insight and helps us offer our opinion on what might help. Tony's also posted some great pictures about our plant of the week. We're going to be talking about that coming up in just a few minutes. And don't forget about the fall festival going on out at Burger Farms. You can get to their page by going to ours, In and Around the House, on Facebook.
I agree. It's the best way to stay in touch with us. But we're going to talk about the plant of the week here just momentarily, and that is the viburnum. And the viburnum, in my opinion, this is my opinion, it's one of the most versatile and garden-worthy shrubs of all shrubs. There's an application for the viburnum. And, Ernie, there's over 150 different species of viburnums.
Oh, really?
So there's an application somewhere for the viburnum, one of my favorite plants. And especially this time of year, and we're going to talk about those. Are we going to take a quick break?
We are.
And we're going to tell you about the plant of the week, and we're going to tell you about some of our favorites. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Time now for our feature, the plant of the week. What are we talking about this week?
The viburnum.
The viburnum.
Because, you know, there are some viburnums out there that just give us a wonderful look in the fall, and it's done with two things, foliage and beautiful, attractive berries. And this time of year, who doesn't like that combination?
Yeah.
I do.
What about you?
All right. I know you love it. Viburnums are so versatile and one of my favorite shrubs, to be quite honest with you. And a lot of times I think we kind of overlook the viburnum. But if I'm ever working on a landscape design with somebody, and there might be some troubled areas or sites, usually a lot of times you can go to the viburnum world and find something that would be suitable. And, you know, viburnums can be used as a standalone specimen, meaning by itself, kind of like you, showy, big. Or it can be used in a mass planting, in a grouping. It's a great foundation kind of plant. You know, you can do them in a grouping along the foundation in some shape, fashion, or form.
Uh-huh.
Most importantly, too, a lot of homeowners are looking for privacy. There are some viburnums that can certainly give you privacy. And along with that, you're getting the height and the width. So a little bit of screening from our neighbors is not a bad thing. It doesn't mean that we do not like our neighbors, but for the most part, I think we all enjoy a little bit of privacy. We want to be outside on the patio or on the deck. And, you know, you're not looking over eating a sandwich and your neighbors are looking at you. Hey, how you doing, Ernie? And you're chewing on that sandwich. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Not bad. Then you start talking and your sandwich gets cold, right?
Right. Well, that never happens with me, but I know the point you're trying to make.
Yeah. So there's a number of uses that you can achieve and gather by using viburnums. And another element about the viburnum that I really, really like is they're very adaptable, especially to various and most soil conditions. So they're not fussy about a lot of the soil conditions. Now, they don't want to sit in a lake by any means,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, there are some out there that will tolerate some moisture as well. You know, pruning, you know, they're not really fussy about pruning, but when you prune a viburnum, I always suggest that you prune those after they finish blooming. If you prune them now in the fall, you're more than likely to cut out some of next year's bloom buds. Now, when you prune them after they bloom, you kind of got another little dilemma, but it's nothing major. You will most likely eliminate some of the late summer fruit, the berries. So, but you typically, you'll prune them after they bloom because we want to see that bloom production the next spring. And in some cases, some of the viburnums are, you know, quite pleasant when it comes to fragrance. Not all. Carlisii is one that people will all the time, you know, they'll say, I saw this shrub, it was blooming, it was kind of white, a little pinky shoe to the center of the bloom. Very fragrant. What was that? And it's, you know, more than likely Carlisii, you know, there's some other fragrant mm-hmm. viburnums out there, but you can also get that element, you know, which is very nice to have with the viburnum itself. And like I said, they're so versatile. I think we overlook them sometimes. And if you have a problem area, you know, it could be a little dry, sometimes maybe a little wet, sunny or shady. More than likely, there's a viburnum that will fit that bill. And they're just a wonderful plant to have. And like I said, beside the attractive foliage, at this given time of year, as they start to turn their beautiful kind of a wine reddish color with the berries, you know, you get some of that fragrance element as well with the blooms. And, you know, they're not really stricken too much with insect issues either.
Right.
Well-behaved. And, you know, they attract wildlife, birds, with the berries. So our buddy Denny, he would like the viburnum if he doesn't already have viburnums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he likes the birds and attracting wildlife to the backyard. Pretty much deer resistant for the most part, from what I can tell and what I've seen and experienced. So it's a great shrub. They come in various heights and so forth. And we're going to take another quick break. When we come out of the break, I'm going to tell you some of my favorites, and I'm going to lead you to the Facebook page and just show you a couple that I've posted. So we've talked about the benefits of the viburnum. Let's talk about some of the favorites and what you can expect to get with these various varieties that I like.
And are you going to do the pronunciation guide that you were practicing earlier?
No, come on. No, that's always fun. I'd have to leave that now.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guy, still continuing our conversation about our plant of the week.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites, and it's the viburnum. And I just want to tell you, there's so many species of viburnums. I'm just going to cover a couple that I feel that are noteworthy, give you some beautiful fall color, the berry production, and so forth. And you can find these at your local garden centers and nurseries. And one of my favorites, and it's because it's kind of a, it hits close to home, and it's one called Cardinal Candy. And Cardinal Candy is an introduction, something was found in the winter one year where it was extremely, extremely cold. And over in Indiana, Rod Henneke came across this particular species called Cardinal Candy. Extremely, extremely hardy, cold hardy, and deer resistant. It produces beautiful, shiny red berries in the fall. And it's just gorgeous. It gets around 6 to 8 feet in height and almost the same in width. And Cardinal Candy is a dilatatum variety, which with the dilatatums are a little bit different than some of the others, that you need to find specific or certain types of pollinators to plant it alongside with or nearby to get that beautiful berry production. Tandoori orange is one of those, or another dilatatum, and you're going to get berry production like nobody's business from this particular variety, and that's called Cardinal Candy. And you can check this one out on our Facebook page. Kind of have a dual photograph out there on the Facebook page showing you what the berries look like in addition to what you can expect the blooms to look like in the spring. Very, very, very attractive. So look for Cardinal Candy at your local garden centers and nurseries. Well worth having. And again, it has a local flair here, and it was found over in Indiana by Rod Henneke. And Rod is a great grower, and I know a lot of the people here in the tri-state area know who I'm talking about, but definitely look for Cardinal Candy. Another one of my favorites is called Winter Thur. It's a viburnum. It's a nudum variety. And again, I'm not going to get into all those varieties, and that's what Ernie was talking about when I was playing some of the various pronunciations. It's kind of interesting when you hear Latin terms and so forth, which I do not know many of them.
I like all that fancy talk you were doing.
Mm-hmm. And it, too, is very attractive. The foliage is kind of glossy, but at the same time has like a leathery texture to it. And during the fall, the leaves turn a stunning, I mean, a stunning maroon color with a reddish hue to it as well. Attractive berries that will turn to like a blue color.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. And it, too, has an application somewhere in your landscape, I'm sure. But winter thur is another well worth viburnum to look for in your local garden centers and nurseries. Now, another one of my favorites, and Ernie, you would probably like this, hence the name because you like to eat, blue muffin.
Ah, the there blue muffin.
Blue muffin. That's a viburnum dentatum, okay? Don't worry about what that means. Sometimes I don't know what it means, but... this is another viburnum that you will find at your local garden centers and nurseries, blue muffin, and excellent, excellent fall color. And the berries are just, they're blue. And you can see the...
hence the name.
Hence the name, blue muffin. And there's a picture of that one on our Facebook page as well. I love that one. And one of my favorites. You know, we were talking about some of the various elements about certain types of viburnums that will give us some privacy or, you know, that screening effect. And one of those is Allegheny. Also, you'll hear it termed as being called another name like leatherleaf viburnum. I love the texture of the foliage. And this viburnum will give you some height. You know, you can rest assured that you will see it around the 10-foot range, give or take, and almost the same spread. So there you go. If you're looking for a little bit of privacy, maybe Allegheny planted in a grouping. And it's been around a while, by the way. It is well worth having in the landscape if you want some type of privacy or you feel that you need that. So that's a good one, along with Shasta. Another interesting name, to say the least, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is a tomentosum variety. So you just tell there's so many different varieties. This is a double file. Viburnum. The blooms are very different and unique. It, too, gets red fruits in the fall. And this particular variety has more of a horizontal growth habit or pattern. And you can factor on it getting around a 6 to 8 foot range and going a little wider than that, 8 to 12. So, again, that would offer up some privacy, too, in the right environment. So look for Shasta. You know, that's one that's been around for a while. And the other I was telling you about a little bit ago that was really, really fragrant. And you don't see this one too often, but landscapers know all about it. And they're more apt to use this particular variety than most people looking for it in the garden center. And that is Carlisii. That's the Korean spice viburnum. And that is the one that you get a couple of things with this one. The foliage turns a beautiful wine reddish color, like some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it too is disease resistant. You get the snowball type of blooms on it. And the flowers are extremely, extremely fragrant. It's pleasant.
Nice.
People like this one. They can relate to this one. And when it's in bloom, that's when I hear about it. But it gets about 5 foot, give or take, maybe six. But one well worth having. So those are just a couple of viburnums that I think highly of. I used to have some viburnums years ago, one called Mohican. And
was it the last one?
The last one, yes. See, you thought that was going to go over my head. That's why you're not in comedy anymore. They had to let you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Mohican was it's a great one. And there's various things you can do with certain types of viburnums, and Mohican was one that I kind of limbed it up and had this beautiful canopy look to it. So it looked like a little small miniature tree, multi-stemmed, had that appearance, and I limbed it up, and it had that canopy, and it was very, very attractive. And it was around 6 foot, give or take. But, you know, viburnums, a very versatile shrub. Look for them at your local garden centers and nurseries. Ask for them. I don't think you're going to find some of these really cool varieties I've just talked about in the chain stores. Only those like you and I that love plants in the garden center world know about these guys.
Yeah.
So the plant of the week, check it out. You'll find them at your local garden centers and nurseries.
And you can check it out on our Facebook page. Yes. Just before you go so you know what to what to ask for when you get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to talk a little bit more about fall fertilization. I want to take advantage of this weekend and the rain that's in the forecast and get you staying on course.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have been passing this on to you for a while. Fertilize, fertilize, fertilize.
It's the best thing you can do for your lawn this time of year. The most important thing that you can do for your lawn this time of year. The Fertilim three-step program, the best time to get into that three-step program is right now. And hopefully, you know, what I want to do is encourage you to get out this weekend, pick up your fertilizer, get it down, take advantage of the upcoming rain that's in the forecast. And then you don't have to turn on the hose, right?
That's right.
You don't have to move the sprinkler heads around, right?
That's right.
That's right. But it's a proven fact that your lawn benefits from a fall fertilization, two fall fertilizations, actually, that it just prepares everything for the following season, you know, and there's a lot of growth, there's a lot of activity that takes place under the soil surface with the root systems of our turf that is so important and beneficial throughout the fall and winter months. It just makes for a healthier lawn. And if you don't fertilize at all, I don't care what you do during the course of the earlier part of the season, but please fertilize twice in the fall.
And it also is going to help the weed control. A healthy lawn combats that.
Exactly.
And makes your life a little easier.
The thicker the lawn is, the healthier the lawn is. You know, it keeps a lot of weeds out. And really, the rest is up to you. And that's like 5% effort. You know, you might spray here, you might spray there, or pull or dig a weed. But it does. The healthier the lawn, the easier it is to take care of it. Now, here's something else I want to put some emphasis on. You know, you can go out and buy any type of lawn fertilizer or program that you want. You don't need to do 4 and 5 and 6 steps. You really don't. That's too much. Sometimes too much nitrogen throughout the course of the season is not healthy for your turf. 3 applications is adequate. But you have to have an established lawn in order to take care of it. So what I'm saying is this. You just don't buy this product and put it out there and come back to us or their garden center next spring and say, I've used this and I'm not seeing anything. You know, it's not the magic bullet. You have to have that all established prior to getting into the program. And once you do, you will see. Those of you that have been using the Fertilim products for a number of years, you know exactly what we're talking about. And it does a wonderful job. And, you know, when you have that healthy lawn, like you said, Ernie, it just keeps everything else out of play.
Yeah.
And you'll be thankful. And it's easy to do. You know, it's one of those gratifying things that you do personally. And if you've never done it, you know, get out to one of your local garden centers and nurseries, ask them about the Fertilim three-step program. And if you don't have a spreader, we're more than willing to offer up and loan you a spreader. It's not rocket science. It's
right.
Just, it's all about timing. And that's why we're putting a lot of emphasis on it today, because the rain that's in the forecast, it's only beneficial. And just do it. And then in another couple of weeks, another 4, 5, 6 weeks, you're going to put down that second fall application in the middle of November, and the rest is done. And then we just turn the corner, and you should see some phenomenal results next season.
What about the aeration? Still have time to get that done?
The month of October, I think, is the best time to aerate your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pulling those core plugs up and getting oxygen down to the root structure of our turf and opening up the ground is so beneficial for our lawns. I can't say it enough. You can really aerate any time of the year, but what's most important is that you do it when there's adequate moisture in the ground, that when you rent the aerator, you want a core plug aerator that it's easy to penetrate the soil surface and pull out, you know, 1.5, 2-inch plugs.
Right. And leave the plugs.
Leave
them on the ground.
Yeah, you don't need to rake those up. And, you know, those who golf, think about it. Right now, they're already aerating some of the golf courses and the greens. That's how important aeration is. And also, you know, you can fertilize at the same time if you want. You're not going to hurt anything. You can sow grass seed at the same time. You're not going to hurt anything. you're making for a healthier lawn. And in the next week or two, we'll hone in on, you know, the aeration element and aspect of our lawns a lot deeper. And it's so beneficial. And it's easy to do. And just as a matter of fact, somebody in the neighborhood has got a pickup truck. Three or four guys go in on the sharing the cost with an aerator.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it at Arch Rental Tool.
Mm-hmm.
And take it back that same day. It's perfect.
Save yourself some money.
Save yourself some money. That's for sure.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I have to pause for a moment, and when we come back,
I want to talk about our little visit again that we had with Kirk up at Vonderhaar.
Okay.
And if you need a chimney to be swept and cleaned out, that's your go-to guy, because we were just up here the other day and I found out some very interesting stuff. And he's going to check out my chimney sometime in the next couple weeks before he comes in to visit with us on the 21st.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it is firewood season. I know we're there at the house. We're getting ready to get some more firewood split and stacked and ready. And it's important to make sure you pay close attention to your chimneys.
That's right. Have you had yours swept this year?
Not yet.
Then
we're on the
list. Kirk is, unless you have somebody else, I don't know. But we were on a little road trip the other day up to Vonderhaar's chimney sweep business. Mm-hmm. And this thing is up there, Cincinnati, Columbus Road. I'm not that familiar with going up north. I get lost. I was all over the place. And by the way, I need hazardous duty pay when I'm out with Katie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Anybody that rides with her.
Oh, no. Just kidding, Katie. I don't know if she's listening or not, but, you know, it's important yearly that chimney inspections are done and done so correctly. And, you know, even talking with Kirk, he told me, although you have a natural gas fireplace, you should always have them inspected, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a long time since I've been up on my roof to look at the crown of the chimney itself, and I noticed I might need a little tuck pointing done, but I certainly do not. You know, it's one of those things I'm paying attention. I certainly do not want that to get away from me, because a lot of moisture gets in there, and all of a sudden it freezes during the winter months, and it becomes a nightmare. But it was a great visit, and listening to some of the things that Kirk was talking about was very interesting, to say the least. And I remembered you talking about your two flue system that goes up.
Yeah. And early on in the season, or if Lisa starts a fire upstairs, there's a hint of the fireplace or a little bit of smoke. You know, nothing that causes a great alarm, but you can smell it downstairs. And that's because, as Tony found out, both those chimney stacks are at the same level up on the roof.
So, and Kirk will be visiting with us on the 21st. And if you're having any issues with your chimney, or tuck pointing issues too, it's hard to find somebody that can do that and do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so important. And I know a lot of the newer homes being built today, they're being built without chimneys, and it's a totally different approach. But the old fireplace and that chimney look, I think, has a classic look all by itself.
Yeah.
And I'm old school. But keeping those in properly working condition is mm-hmm. so important. And having it cleaned out annually, you may save yourself, from a potential fire hazard.
Sure.
You know, something occurring. Because, you know, it's when you open that up and you're using your fireplace throughout the course of the season, and it's that time of year too, people are going to be firing those things up. You know, that temperature fluctuation with the chimney, and if you're getting water issues inside that unknowingly, that could spell disaster. So join us on the 21st. I had a great visit up there with Kirk, and I knew I liked Kirk from the beginning, because he just came in and he looked like he had been out in the field hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got guys like that, that's what local businesses are all about.
Sure, sure. And I just absolutely, we both do. We love our fireplaces. And we had people say, you know, you really ought to close those up or maybe put gas. There's something about
mm-hmm.
a nice wood fire in the dead of winter when everybody else is miserable and complaining about the cold and the dark, something about coming into the house and that fire being lit, it is so relaxing and so comforting. I will never, ever own a house without a wood burner in it. And because shortly after I got the house, been there, I think 31 years, transformer went out, we were without power for a day or so. And it was the middle of winter. Lit both those fireplaces. The house was nice and toasty, and we didn't have any concerns. And I just have that comfort level when we have the wood-burning fireplace.
You never know what type of winter might be coming our way or headed our way, and you have a power outage. Yep. I mean, a lot of times people are without power for 8, 12 hours, maybe a day or two. It's not often, which we're very fortunate of that.
Yeah,
Duke Energy does a great job here locally in the tri-state area. But, you know, those of us that like to burn fires, that's important, and important to do it safely. And definitely check it out. Well, Kirk will be with us on the 21st. And I thought of you the other day immediately, and I'm thinking, I wish Ernie was on this little road trip with us. But we didn't have enough room in the car for you.
Invitation must have gotten lost in the mail.
B-105,
in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We do need to pause for a moment, but when we come back.
Real quick, before we conclude this morning's show, a couple things we're going to talk about. It's the ideal time of the year to plant. It's not too late. And also a few tips for you that love the perennial gardening aspect of things. A couple things where you need to be at this point in time. And we'll discuss that in just a moment. 749-B105. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. There's a little more Tom Petty for you. We lost Tom, who passed away this past weekend, and he was a favorite of ours. That's for certain.
I've been to at least 4 Petty concerts. Mm-hmm. What an entertainer. He gets way back into the 70s. Those were the good old days. And, you know, I mean, he produced a lot of good stuff all throughout his career, and what a sudden loss. Now I wish that I'm thinking, gosh.
Wish you'd have gone to that 5th one.
I know. You know, you never know, and that's why it's important to live today as best you can live.
That's exactly right. So, thank you, Buddha.
No, you look like Buddha. I don't look like Buddha. You look like Buddha. A happy Buddha. But anyway, you know, it's that time of year. I want to just, before we conclude this morning's show, just to encourage people, if you still want to do a little bit of planting, you can still do so. The weather's perfect for it. You know, the fall season's the best time. Less stress on trees and shrubs and so forth. And a lot of activity that still goes on underneath the ground that sets everything up for next year. And you can get some great deals.
Yep. Now, this is important for you to explain about the less stress. And you said this in just a comment 2 weeks ago, where the reason it's important or the best time to plant is because the ground isn't frozen and it gives a chance for the trees and the bushes and shrubs.
It's just the opposite of what we experience in the spring. Mm-hmm. You know, in the spring, we get warmer temperatures and air temperatures, but the ground's still cool. And in the fall, it's just the opposite. The ground's still warm, but the outside air temperatures are getting cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we go into the fall, given that, and trees, you know, as they drop their foliage, they're not trying to sustain what's up top.
Right.
So everything's concentrated down below with the root system. And that's why the fall is the best time to do it. And there's a lot less stress. And the tree or the shrub that you plant can go through the fall and winter months easier without any interruption, and it's getting rooted in, it's getting established for next season, and then you got all of next spring when things start to warm up, it really takes off. So when you plant a tree, this is kind of the old saying, the first year they sleep, the second year they creep, and the third year they leap. So a lot of times when people say, I'm not seeing any growth or activity with that tree, you know, for the most part, that's just a good rule of thumb, or just a good generalization of how things kind of go and behave. And when you're planting this time of year, stay away from the green box. I'll tar and feather you if you use the green box. Too much nitrogen. Stay away from it. Use a root stimulator. Fertilum makes a great root stimulator. Use it, or use Biotone from Espoma. These are great products that really help get a tree off to a good start and a shrub off to a good start. And you can also use these products, too, on your annuals throughout the spring season when you're planting for the first time for the upcoming summer months. You can also use it on your perennials, which right now in the perennial world, we should be getting ready to finish things up. You know, we got to the middle of the month, the third week of the month in the Midwest, where we can still print or plant perennials without really any serious worries or concerns. and, you know, start getting the beds cleaned up for next year, spring season. So get these things done. All of your divisions, for the most part, too, should be done by now. So we're getting there, and we need to just start putting things to rest and start thinking about fall bulbs. And we'll really hone in on some fall bulbs next week for spring color. And so that's where you should be at this point when it comes to perennials.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Bob on the line from New Richmond who has a question for you about trimming blueberries. Do you have a lot of blueberries, Bob?
I have about four plants.
Yeah.
They've been about two and a half years I planted them.
Okay.
And I have two or three different varieties, and one of them getting real bushy. It's supposed to get up to 6 foot by 6 foot. But I want to make sure that it gets up, you know, does it kind of evenly.
How right. was your harvest this year?
Well, it was decent. You know, for the bush right now is only like 2 foot by, you know, 3 foot where it's spiking up real bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know if I should need to trim them back in order to take in encourage new growth.
Yeah, you should prune out blueberries on an annual basis, and you know, don't go overboard. You know, we were talking about that earlier with a little bit of pruning. Was it with Pete?
Or, yeah,
but, yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody we were talking about pruning a couple of various trees, but you know, be careful not to go overboard with your pruning, and never remove no more than two or three of the oldest canes. You know, or parts of that blueberry shrub when you, in fact, do prune. You still have foliage on yours?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I like to prune things. You know, you can do it late winter, early spring. You're going to cut out some of next year's development, but that's good. That's what you want to do. You want to prune them to produce. So I like to go after them late winter, early spring. And then I can see inside the plant and prune it accordingly, you know, but you just remove a couple of the oldest, you know, stems, canes.
Okay. So let's say early spring, February,
late winter, early spring. Yeah. That's when,
all right.
Some people will prune in late summer and fall. But you're sacrificing some of next year's fruit. So, and you're going to do that too when you do it late winter, early spring.
Uh-huh.
But it's important that you keep them in check.
Okay. And I got what my wife calls a house huggers.
House huggers.
They kind of a perennial that comes up and has nice purple flowers this time of year.
Would it be, is it like a grassy type of plant? Liriope?
No. It has kind of an oval leaves, pale green, but like I said, it has a almost looks like a cauliflower type setting on a flower that comes up.
Is it an evergreen plant of some sort? I've not heard that term, house hugger. I'm embarrassed to tell you that, but I've not.
It's I guess you would call it one of those real soft, tubular type plants. Like I said, it comes up every year. And I just didn't know when was the best time to separate those. I noticed my honeybees loved them this year.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I had to check that out. I don't know. I've never heard the term house hugger for a plant. So I tell you what, I'll get your phone number and find out for you. I'm going to learn something. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm interested in that, and probably I should know it, but unfortunately I don't.
Well, I mean, they're a real popular plant. I just don't know what the name technical name is.
I remember, you know, it's like sedums, you know, you'll hear some of the old-timers call them live forevers. And, you know, it's house hugger. Ernie's a big house hugger,
yeah.
But I'll either check that out. I'll get John to get your phone number, and I'll check into it.
All right,
thanks.
Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got to pause for a moment. We're not going to pause for a moment. But the house hugger, there was an obvious joke there. It's got to be related to the tree hugger.
I don't know.
I crack myself up sometimes.
I know
sometime.
You do. You crack me up a lot.
You're so going to learn something.
You're going to learn. Well, I've not heard that term. And I'm embarrassed to tell you, but I don't know.
Don't be embarrassed.
I'm extremely embarrassed.
You can't know it all.
I'm going to leave the station this morning with my tail between my legs.
And your head hung low.
And my head hung low. Thanks, Ernie.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. But it has been a great morning. We covered an awful lot of ground. Make sure you jump onto our Facebook page. The plant of the day, the plant of the week is on there. And this is the perfect chance for you to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and pick up some new plants. Try some new things.
I agree. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Make the best of it.